The human spirit is unconquerable. We are individuals and we are sovereign, born with unlimited potential, gifted from our creator. Our mission is to break free from the systems that bind us.
I volunteer as tribute.
We strive for peace and prosperity and overcome all challenges, roadblocks, and obstacles. We are empowered because we think for ourselves and we act for ourselves. We are self-reliant and independent, but guided by the wisdom of those who share our values.
What possible difference can I make?
There is no government, no ruler, nor ideas that are able to stop us. We are driven to succeed because we seek political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
This is Mike Corbell, and you are listening to The Invictus Mind.
Welcome back to another episode of the Invictus Mind podcast, where we discuss the principles of finding political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom. This is your host, Mike Corbell. If you are new to the show, I want to thank you for checking us out. If you've been here before, I also want to thank you for coming back. And of course, you know that the goal in this podcast is to help people understand what it means to be unconquerable. You know, unfortunately for many people, that seems to be getting harder and harder these days. There seems to be bad news daily, and even if you try to escape the 24-hour cycle of negativity on TV, we always have social media feeding us things to be angry or fearful about. Then, of course, our coworkers, our family members, and friends always want to share their take on the state of the world. Now, I don't think it's reasonable to be completely ignorant of the happenings in this world. It is important to be aware of things when we need to be, but I do think that constantly reacting to whatever scary thing comes up next is extremely unhealthy, and it can leave us unfulfilled and often feeling like we are victims. Well, my guest someone today has overcome that challenge, and she is someone who I think has found a formula to becoming Invictus. After surviving 25 years in the corporate world, she decided to take her career in her own hands and pursue the life she really wanted. She is now a full-time digital nomad. She calls herself a professional world traveler after visiting 27 countries on 6 continents in the last 4 years. She is a New York Times featured business peak and lifestyle coach, where she helps frustrated professionals look at ways to overcome career burnout by addressing things like mindset, money management, and goal planning. I'd like to welcome to the program Heather Markle. How are you doing, Heather?
Thanks for having me. I'm great. How are you?
Great, great. You know, I wanted to start off by just sharing a little bit where you and I connected. I know that there are many people who listen to this podcast, and I've talked to many podcasters, and so I wanted to shout out a tool for those who are aspiring to have a podcast of their own, where you and I connected. It's a place called podmatch.com. And Heather, when I saw your profile, I saw some things that stuck out in my mind, things that I love to talk about. And of course, your profession is as a business coach, and you're also a motivational speaker. You're an entrepreneur, and your specialty is actually world travel.
Yes. And actually, I just became a best-selling author last week. So very excited.
Well, great. You know, I was going to talk about that, of course, but So congratulations on becoming an international best-selling author. And you have a lot to share. So, you know, it's been a while since I've worked in the corporate world. I've actually been independent for about 6 years now.
Wow. But congratulations.
Thank you. But it's only really, it's been recently that where I really have honed in on this idea of becoming a nomadic worker, or a digital nomad as the word is called now. So I'd love to chat about what it means to be a digital nomad.
Sure. And it's funny because I actually have come to, I don't think there's a right or wrong of definitions, but I actually feel like there's multiple types of nomad and traveler. And I think digital nomad, we kind of look at that as someone in their 20s or 30s that has a digital job and travels. And I'm not in my 20s or 30s. And there's plenty of us out there that are older and traveling. And some of us do it, you know, without working, and some of us do it working. So there are multiple ways of doing it, whether you're a digital nomad, a traveler, or anything in between.
Great, great. Well, I won't embarrass anybody here, but you and I are probably around the same age, and I really appreciate some of the things you mentioned in your profile about when you get to this this part of your life where, you know, you're constantly working. And what are you working for? You know, are you waiting for that retirement to come, you know, in when you're 65? And then how much of your life can you really appreciate? Well, your idea is, why not appreciate life now, even while you're still working?
Yes. And, you know, it took me a long time to get there, but I really struggled for years. I fell in love with travel when I was 16, and I got sent maybe a little against my will, but it ended up really well to live with a host family in France. And it completely changed my life. And I learned to speak French fluently. I got immersed in the culture, and I just fell in love with the whole experience. And then I came back, and rather than doing more of that, I bought into that whole society construct where you get a job, you make as much money as you can, you save for retirement. While you're at it, your joy should be making more money so you can buy, like you buy a box, so you can buy stuff to put in the box. And if you're lucky, you know, every so often you can buy a bigger box so that you can buy more stuff to put in that bigger box, and so on and so on. And I did that. And I even got married to the wrong person and, you know, and finally got divorced and looked at, wow, I'm really unhappy working here. What am I? As you said, like, what am I doing? There's not a sense of great meaning or fulfillment here. And, you know, I had a long time to go before retirement. And I'm like, I literally felt like I was rotting at my desk, not using my skill set, not understanding where my skill set fit in another job. I looked at other jobs, and there was nothing I read that lit me up. Like, we need you to make, you know, sales calls and you'll be part. I'm like, yeah, okay, I can do this, but I'm not excited about it. Mm-hmm. And so I actually, you know, I started the business coaching while I was working full time, and originally thought I'm just going to actually jump ship for the business, and it became a way of life.
You know, you were talking there about, you know, just working and, you know, putting things in a box and just kind of being a cog in a wheel. And I've been for a long time, I've been teaching people about this plan that they call the 40-40-40 plan. I don't know if you've heard this terminology before.
Never heard of it. No.
You work 40 hours a week for 40 years of your life. And then when you retire, you live on 40% of whatever you did your whole life.
Wow. And yeah.
It just does not seem to be feasible. I mean, you know, you talk about fulfillment and missing out and some of the exciting things in life. And, you know, you get to a certain point in life, you're like, okay, you know, I might have missed a lot in my life, but I still have a long time to go in front of me. Why not just take advantage of that time right now? So I think it's a shift in a way people look at their careers that I see happening and definitely become more prominent over the last couple of years.
Well, here's, yes. And I think the Great Resignation is a great, because I quit before the Great Resignation. So I thought I was crazy. So now I feel like, hey, maybe I started that movement. So, but here's the thing that quitting has made me realize, because I never looked at this. We buy into this concept, like I was talking about earlier, where you graduate, you get a job, you get married, have some kids, work really hard. And then when you retire, you can finally enjoy yourself. Well, the average retirement age is what, 65? And I'm sure by the time our retirement age comes, it will be higher because it goes up. But you know what I never looked at, and I think most people don't, is the average life expectancy. And if you actually bother to research that globally, and you take the average human being would have roughly 7 years when they retire to enjoy that money in their life. Really? Like, that just doesn't seem like it's all that work for 7 years. I don't know. And if hopefully you're lucky and you live longer than that, and or live longer and also more healthy, but that's the average.
Right. I think that's the key right there. When you say longer and more healthy, we see people living into their 80s and even up to 90. And of course, we can talk about the financial preparation it takes to get to that point, you know, whether you can actually retire at age 65. But, you know, I can tell you for myself, when I'm 70, 80, I want to be able to spend time with my grandchildren. Perhaps I'll have a couple of them, but I also want to be able to see the world. But I don't know if it'll be as easy for me to get around when I'm that age as it is, you know, when I'm younger, when I'm healthy. So why not take advantage of that stuff that's in front of us, that's available to us when we have the vibrancy in our own lives to do that? So.
Absolutely. And that's why I love the Great Resignation, that people are starting to, I know many of them are actually quitting to get other jobs that pay more, which is one choice. That's wonderful. But others are looking at the quality of their life and trying to find more of a sense of meaning. And I am so excited that so many people are taking that step.
Now, you mentioned that you started becoming a business coach before you left your full-time job. You worked in corporate America. What was your full-time job?
I worked in telecom. So I worked between, let's see, France Telecom, British Telecom, and AT&T. And I worked all over sales, marketing, and customer service.
Okay. Okay. And then you decided that you were going to be a coach to help other people escape that corporate job?
Well, actually, I think I always had this sense that I was an entrepreneur and I just didn't know what to do with it. And finally started, you know, at some point into my career, taking entrepreneurial coaching classes. I actually became a certified coach, and then I learned how to make a business around coaching. And so, yeah, so just on the side, it wasn't about helping people quit their job. It was more about ultimately, I have all this business expertise and I can help people grow their business. And the other thing I learned, which travel has reinforced, is that I have a lot of great intuition and I'm pretty straight to the point. Like I don't like BS in business, which is why I called one of my businesses Bullbuster Business Coaching. Mm-hmm. And so I learned that one of the things I'm inherently gifted at is helping people understand why they're not having the business they want, which ultimately, you know, they come to me thinking they need like a sales or a marketing plan, which they do. But before I go there, you know, I like to delve in and be like, actually, it's not the marketing plan that's a problem. It's your belief system. And we need to sort of get in there and look at what's fueling that and recalibrate it.
Yeah. And I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs and that's the biggest thing they always share with me is that a person's mindset can make much opportunity available to them, but it also can be an obstacle to prevent them from getting that opportunity and reaching that potential. And so there's a lot of self-help books. It's one of the largest industries on the planet right now is self-help and mindset shift. But, you know, when you find somebody that you can really resonate with, somebody who has that experience, somebody who maybe has your personality, I think it's important to have that kind of coach because, you know, you're not getting it in the corporate world. You're certainly not getting that mindset in public education. And so I think somebody in your position could be a great asset to people.
Yeah. And thank you. And I also, what you just said also is really important, finding someone you resonate with, because I mean, I've certainly have talked to potential clients and realized that we're not a fit because frankly, if you're going to hire a coach and pay the money for that, you want to make sure that you like them, that you trust them, that you have a synergy with them, because if you don't, you're basically going to disagree with them and not do anything they tell you to do and get no results. So there's no point, which is a waste of time for both you and the coach. So my policy is basically exploring whether I'm a good fit with someone and making sure that we have that synergy and alignment so that we can work well together.
Awesome. Now, I definitely want to talk about some of your experience traveling, but more along the lines of, you know, finding that coach. And I'm gonna wrap two concepts into one here as I say this, because what we've seen, we mentioned the Great Resignation, but what we've seen over the last 2 years or so is that there is a really important need to create multiple streams of income, to kind of control the source of your income. There's no job security anymore. There really wasn't before 2020, but we saw for a fact that in 2020, there's not a lot of job security. So, you know, a person who wants to be able to take that next step or maybe say, I want something more to do in my life. How would they go about finding a coach in the first place?
So, I mean, there's an infinite number of ways. I'm someone that not only did I take a year-long program to get certified, which, look, there are fly-by-night coaching training programs that can teach you in a week or a month to be a coach. But having taken a year-long program, I feel like it's so deep and involved to learn to be a good coach. And so I also joined, there's something called the International Coach Federation, which is an American organization that basically kind of sets the guidelines for the coaching industry, if you will. And it is very American, and there are other similar organizations in other countries. But in America, if you go to, I think it's icf.org, or it might be coachfederation.org, they are, what they do is they have a list of coaches that are accredited by the ICF. I'm not going to say it's the end all be all. I'm actually, you know, for us to be listed in their directory, we actually have to pay a lot of money and do things to get listed, which I decided not to do ultimately anymore. So clearly someone like me or others out there may be good coaches and not listed there, but it's a good starting point. The other thing you could do is go to some, if you look at the schools and programs that they accredit, my school is one of them. You could go to those schools' websites and you'll see our listings, those of us that have gone through the program and gotten accredited and are in, I feel it's worthwhile to have a coach that's actually accredited as opposed to someone, because the coaching industry isn't regulated. So anyone can hang a sign up that says they're a coach, right? So that's why I think it's confusing for the market. And so it pays to do your research and ask some good questions and do your, you know, look at into the right places to find the coach.
Right, right. And I appreciate that you said you have a, you know, a certification and, you know, a year of experience. And of course, that always looks good on a resume. I'm thinking back to when I wanted to become a piano teacher. Now, I'm not a very good piano player myself, but I always figured I could coach somebody, because as long as I'm one lesson ahead of the trainee, then I can be called a coach. But, you know, if they wanted to learn how to play Mozart, I'm not the person that they want to go to. So
absolutely.
But, you know, your expertise has been in world travel. For the last 4 years, you've visited 27 countries and on 6 different continents. And I think that's remarkable.
Yeah, I was actually in Ushuaia, met someone going out on a boat to Antarctica. And they said, you know, you can come down to the dock and see if there's room on the boat. And I was very tempted. I didn't. And I'm ultimately glad with that choice, because it turned out they had, I met people who did the crossing back that day and learned they had suffered 40 hours of strapped to the bed waves, like big waves. Yeah, no.
So I've never met anyone who's been to Antarctica, but I'll take your word that there's probably travel tours and stuff like that you can take there. So
there are, you can actually fly there too, from New Zealand, which would have been an adventure, but yeah. So it's one of the places I want to go, but haven't been yet.
That's great. Well, you know, so my wife and I, we got our passports just a couple of years ago, right before the pandemic started. We were going to go to South America or Central America. We're going to go to Costa Rica, and we missed that opportunity. And now life has taken us different directions. But as we can see, the world is constantly, you know, feeding us bad things to do. So, you know, rather than putting our travel plans on hold, you know, we have to just go through it. I mean, what would you say to somebody who's hesitant about traveling right now?
There's one force that's always constant to me, which is that the people of a country are not the government of a country. And to your point earlier, you know, there's a lot of bad news and we read all these things. There's so many outlets to create fear. And if you keep looking at those outlets, then naturally you're going to feel like you shouldn't go. I happen to look at other outlets. So I've seen, so as a traveler, by the way, piece of advice, if you're American, you might want to join the STEP program if you are a traveler, which is, I think it's travel.gov. You go enroll and put the countries you want to go to, and they'll send you emails about what's happening in the country, if there's a conflict, if there's embassy events going on, things like that. So, I have gotten some of those alerts that would say, don't go to this country because of crime and terrorism, COVID, et cetera. And then I run a Facebook group, and I'm in plenty of travel Facebook groups that people are out traveling in just those very places, and they're having a great time. And rather than talk about, you know, these warnings, you're seeing people enjoy themselves. And I think travel always comes with a set of risks. That's no different now than it was before. Clearly, when it comes to COVID, yeah, you might be thinking, do they have a good hospital system just in case? So that's a logical concern. But I think if you are a smart traveler, then I would say, absolutely. You know, if you feel, first off, you have to feel comfortable with the whole COVID thing, mask wearing. I do feel that when we go to another country, it's like going to someone's home. So the same way you wouldn't walk into someone's living room and make yourself at home and, you know, you'd respect their rules, I believe the same thing follows in other countries. So if you're reading guidelines that another country has and you don't like them, do not go there. but if you're willing to adhere to guidelines and be a smart traveler, I think that it's absolutely, you know, it's certainly travel starting to open up again, which is great. And I think it's worth starting to explore again.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned that there's a phrase called when in Rome, do as the Romans do, right? And I don't think it pertains exactly to what we're talking about here. But I do think that, if you are going to another culture, you definitely need to understand their culture. You understand not just the rules and COVID laws and stuff like that, but you mentioned that you speak a couple of different foreign languages. And I had a conversation with another travel expert. I'll throw his name out. I don't know if you know him or not, but I interviewed Mikhail Thorup a couple episodes back.
I feel like I've heard the name. Yeah.
He has a podcast called The Expat Money Show, and he's traveled for about, 25 years of his life. And he just has all kinds of knowledge about how to prepare for different cultures. And I mentioned to him on that show that you can always tell an American in a foreign country because they don't know how to speak another language.
Yep. I speak six. So actually I can get by in a few countries, not seeming American, which is cool.
Well, that's good. That's good. So have you always wanted to travel, or is just something that you just decided, I think I'm just going to do it now? Is this been something that's been weighing you for a long time?
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned before, I really fell in love with travel at 16 when I lived with a French host family. And then when I got my first real job out of college, I worked for France Telecom and I would go to France all the time. So work became my way to travel, which was great. So I was like constantly in France. And then when I worked for British Telecom, because of all my language skills, they made me a joint venture liaison and I went all over Europe. So that was great. So, and I also went to the UK, like one of my best business trips ever. I was partnered with an account manager and he was, this guy, Kevin, he was one of my favorite, teammates. He got us this amazing trip. We had to go to, we started in London, then we went to Barcelona, and then we went to Mallorca, all on business. Mm. And then the company encouraged that we do a Saturday night stayover because it made airfare cheaper. So I spent the weekend in Paris. So that was like, that was the best business trip ever. And so for a while, my work allowed me to travel and I loved it, but, mergers and acquisitions happened. And then I found myself in a domestic company, in a domestic job with no international travel, with no need for my language skills, constantly asking, being told, oh, we'll work on that and never happening. And that's when I started getting frustrated and I would use all of my vacation time to travel. And pretty much at the end of every vacation, I didn't want to come home, but bought into the belief that that I had responsibilities, ironically, ones I had created, and I had to be more loyal to those responsibilities than to what I wanted.
Yeah, it seems that vacation time, when you get it from a company, is never long enough. You always want to stay somewhere and, hopefully most people listening, they have at least a satisfactory job where they can come home and they're not like regretting that, oh, I got to leave this wonderful place on my vacation and go back to the doldrums of having a 9-to-5 job. But, for those who are like, I want to travel, I want to be able to get out there. Some of the work that you've done is you help people find ways of actually being able to travel without having to, spend a lot of money or travel cheaply or being able to use the resources they have to travel full time.
Yeah. So I call myself a full-time travel coach. So pairing that with business coaching, I help people at this point. One thing that's really neat is with the Great Resignation, remote work is becoming more and more acceptable. So some people may just want to actually keep their job and travel around the world, but, need some help with logistics. Other people want to travel they are in corporate and they want to not be in corporate anymore. So, you know, helping them understand, I mean, it's a completely different lifestyle. So mm-hmm. you do have to realize that and be ready for a very different lifestyle in full-time travel than you had in corporate, unless you are independently wealthy. And of course, if you are, good for you, do it your way. but basically, I'm working with people that are, you know, the point of full-time travel is not to ruin your future. So no, in no way am I advocating take all your money and run and have the best few years of your life. And then no, it's not what you do. It's about creating the structures and the budget that work for you. And I think one thing some people who just jump into full-time travel might not consider is how they want to travel. And especially if you're coming from corporate and you are used to nice hotels, eating out every meal, taking the most expensive tour, buying tons of souvenirs, that, for example, is going to change. And if you want to stay at higher end travel and you don't think about that, when you jump ship and travel full time, you're going to run out of money really quickly, which is what we don't want. So I'm helping people really look at how they want to travel, set a realistic budget, and then figure out, you know, how long do they need to keep working to get that budget? Are they already there? Can we make some modifications? And then I think also looking at the mindsets that, as in the business coaching, there's a lot of mindsets that keep us from believing we can travel full time. So I'm addressing those with my clients and then going into planning logistics. So it's about, you know, things like what are you going to do about your taxes? What vaccinations do you need? What should you worry about? How do you actually plan your travel and things like that?
What were some of the common worries or concerns that people have about being able to travel? And we talked a little bit about COVID and some of that stuff, but you know, what would prevent a person from just taking that trip to Europe or, you know, spending a month in Africa or something like that? What are some of those concerns?
Sure. So the number one concern that I've come across is how do I afford full-time travel? Because it seems like, again, if you're in corporate, you think, you know, you take a vacation for a week and you blow through like $1,000 to $5,000 easy peasy, and it's no sweat because you're still working. So they, you know, then they think full-time travel, $1,000 to $5,000 a week. Well, I can't afford that. So, you know, that's the number one concern. Number two, I'd say numbers two and three would be loneliness and connection. Like, how do I make friends when I'm traveling? And even if you're traveling with a friend or a partner, it's still just you or just the two of you, and it can get lonely. And there are concerns about, well, I'm going to be far away from my friends and family. How do I feel good and not feel disconnected? And I think a third one would be solo travel and solo travel safety, and especially for women. How do I go around some of these places and travel safely?
Well, you know, so when I'm thinking about going on a vacation, you know, I'm going to put myself back into when I was working in the corporate days. You know, I'd have a week or two to go on vacation. And of course, you want to go somewhere you've never been before, and you want to see, you know, all the touristy stuff and the things that cost a lot of money. But I think that's quite a bit different mindset than going to somewhere just because I want to experience the culture. I want to see what normal people do in this part of the world. You could probably do that for a lot less money than actually going to all the real nice expensive restaurants that are, you know, and all the touristy stuff that you see. And for me, I like the prospect of being able to say, I want to meet some people and see what real life is like in these places, because I think that's probably where you're going to get the most fulfilling experiences than just going to all the places that, you know, the travel magazine might list. Would you agree with that?
I do. And that's one of the lovely things. It's funny. When I lived with this host family at 16, I got to immerse in the culture. In vacation, you know, when I was doing vacations, it was very much like running around quickly, making sure I see as much as I can of this place and then off. So when I started full-time traveling, that's the first thing I connected with. I was like, oh, I can actually be here and explore and not, in fact, my travel now, I can't tell you how many major tourist sites I probably have not seen because I'm off sitting in a cafe for the day and looking at what people dress like, what they talk about, or I might be just going for a walk and finding this road and going down that road and exploring some hike that, you know, that the average tourist doesn't have time for. And I find that much more enriching than, you know, even a half day in conversation with a local person to me is so much more rich than just going to, you know, going up the Eiffel Tower for the afternoon.
Well, we say that as we're talking, you have a picture of Easter Island in your background there for those who are watching this on video. So I have not been able to go there, but that, you know, that's one of those touristy things. But definitely when you do that kind of stuff, you have great stories to share with people.
So, yeah. And so Easter Island is one of those places, sure enough. And I was just in Singapore, by the way. Both of those kind of have a bunch of tourist things that you're supposed to go look at. I spent a week in each country. The average tourist probably spends a few days. So I was really lucky, actually, just a tip. I was in Chile and I was in Santiago. And as a full-time traveler, one of the luxuries we have is flexibility. So that means finding much better airfares. So I found, you know, it's at the time I went in 2019, it was roughly $1,000 round trip to go from Santiago to Easter Island. I found a flight for $300 round trip, Dreamliner. It was wonderful. Stayed in a youth hostel. They did have giant cockroaches, but anyway, that aside, the getting to actually see the island, talk to locals about the history of Easter Island is so much more fascinating than I had any idea about. Eating in places the locals told me to eat, hitchhiking. I didn't get a car, like hitchhiking, meeting other people, this whole cool experience because I wasn't in a hurry and I wasn't just trying to go see all the Moai. Singapore as well. I do think absolutely you can get through Singapore in 3 days and have seen all of the main tourist sites. And sure enough, by the middle of my stay, I was a little bit bored because I was like, oh gosh, like I've kind of done those things. What now? And then I just walked around and found places that were I'm sure not on any tourist list, but they were just pretty or they felt authentic. And I think that's the luxury and wonderfulness of full-time travel is no pressure travel and just walking around and finding what you enjoy about a place. So, and Easter Island is definitely, if you can go there, I highly recommend it.
Well, yeah, definitely put it on my bucket list. Now I want to go back to, you mentioned something about helping women understand like the safety advice when traveling. And then you mentioned something about hitchhiking. And so here in America, you know, they teach us that we probably shouldn't hitchhike with strangers anymore.
Correct.
But I've heard somebody else, not just yourself, but somebody else I was talking to said that, you know, it's a completely different type of mindset and culture in other places of the world where you can't just hop in the car with a stranger and, you know, they'll take you wherever you need to go.
So Easter, first off, as a solo female traveler, I would never hitchhike alone anywhere. and I didn't do that in Easter Island either. But Easter Island is because it's basically tourists in their car and they've rented the car. And there's sort of I didn't know this, but there's like a hidden hitchhiking culture there. Like it's just known. If you rent a car, you're probably going to happen upon people that need a ride and that are tourists as well. So it seemed very normal there. It's not something I'd experienced. When I was in Argentina, met a guy and we traveled together for a month and we hitchhiked together, but on my own, I would never have hitchhiked. And that was, you know, quite an adventure and meeting people. And like, obviously most of the people when you hitchhike in Argentina don't speak English. So great to have the Spanish under your belt to be able to have conversations.
There you go.
So yeah, so absolutely. Hitchhiking alone, I wouldn't recommend it.
What are some of the other things you would tell people to maintain their safety when traveling worldwide?
I believe that each of us needs to make a set of rules and travel with them. Like even when I was in New Zealand, which is supposedly one of the safest places on earth, I still abided by my rules. So one thing is I don't go drink alone in a bar at night.
Seems obvious.
Yeah. But there are some things that seem obvious that we don't always do, right? I always, the first thing I do when I get to anywhere, including New Zealand, is I ask whether it's a host, a hostel owner, a hotel manager, whatever it is, I ask two questions. One is it safe for me to walk back at night alone? And if there's any hesitation, so is it safe for me to walk home alone at night? If it's not, yes. If there's like a moment's hesitation and they're thinking about it, I don't walk home alone at night. And second question, are there any areas I shouldn't go? And so then I do those two things. I follow the guideline of not walking home alone at night, if that's the case. And if they told me not to go somewhere, I don't go there. The other thing is, as a woman in certain cultures, you need to recognize, especially if you're American, women here have certain liberties, and we are treated in a certain way that is not the case in many other cultures. And you're not going to help yourself by trying to change the way they view women in other cultures.
And in fact, talking about things like dress code and things like that, the way you present yourself.
There's dress code. There's whistling, flirting.
Okay.
Different cultural things. There are certain countries I simply would not, as a woman alone, I would not accept an offer from a man to have dinner or do anything in the evening unless you're interested in him either sexually or for a relationship. You may find yourself in trouble if you don't. There's just understanding dating cultures in different places is essential if you're traveling alone, because yeah, that can land you in trouble if you don't.
I can agree with that and understand where you're coming from. So what are some of the other hardships that there are, like when you're traveling? I mean, obviously you want to be cognizant of some of the safety tips, but I think that's probably true anywhere you go in the world, even here in the States. But, what are some of the other things that you might cause challenges that people should be aware of?
Yeah, there's two. If you're a full-time traveler, there's like two giant ones. Which is packing and planning. Mm. So packing, first of all, you go on vacation. Well, you got to bring, you want to change three times a day and you bring this huge bag full of stuff and then either a second bag or leave room for all the souvenirs you're going to travel or take back rather. So when you're full-time traveling, unless you're doing a luxury route, you are carrying all your belongings yourself. So you will quickly learn, even if you thought you packed light, you didn't pack light enough. Mm. So you want to pack as light as possible, not only because you're carrying it, but because if you become a target for theft, if you are carrying like tons of bags and you can't manage all the bags because you just have so much stuff. So pack light. And depending how often you move, you're constantly packing and unpacking, which is a hardship. So you'll have to find your own comfort with how many, how long do you stay in a place based on how many times do you want to pack and unpack again? And the other thing is aligned with that is every time you move, you got to figure out where you're going to stay. You got to figure out your transportation and do some research probably on like what it is you want to do there. I myself kind of like cut out the research a bit. And I'm just like, I usually just travel and meet someone that I have a great synergy with. And they're like, oh, you have to check out blank. And I'm like, great. And I put that on my list and figure out how to get there and go. And then when I'm there, I'll kind of take a look at like go to a tourist office or just go on the internet, kind of look a little bit about like what's on there. But mm-hmm. I really prefer to just talk to locals who just say, do this, do that, whatever it is. And do those things. So, but it can get on you when you're, especially at the beginning of my travels, I was moving every few days and it really does get to be annoying to be like, oh my God, like how am I lining up the place to stay and then the bus and what time does it get in? And now I'm getting from the bus station to the. So
that right. It would seem that you don't want to be carrying lots of bags around with you. So you have to get used to, wearing maybe two or three outfits, putting them in a backpack and just traveling that way.
Yes. In fact, I feel like my biggest accomplishment was, I forget where I was, but a homeless guy came up to me, looked me over and kept walking. And I was like, I got it down. So I do not dress up. I usually wear the same shirt 2 days in a row, saves on laundry as well. Sure, I mean, unless sure, I'm in absolutely. A hot, sweaty place, but otherwise, you know, yeah, it's not luxury travel.
Well, that seems reasonable. Now, are you the kind of person that would go on like a social media platform and say, okay, who can I meet before I go to this place? Or are you more of a, you know, I'm just going to go introduce myself to a stranger and make a friend that way?
I do both. Okay. Absolutely. And I actually started a Facebook group where now it's big enough that we can start trying to meet up as we travel. I strongly recommend looking for Facebook groups specific to the country you're in. And there's a bunch of other great Facebook groups. But yes, I think doing that. And in fact, when I was in New Zealand, I was just marooned there for 2 years because of the pandemic. And one of the friends I made was I joined a group about New Zealand, and somehow I contributed a lot. And the owner of the group contacted me and we had a chat. So I now actually help moderate the group. And it turned out that she and I are both Americans and we had a lot in common, and we ended up meeting up in Auckland and becoming friends. So you never know where those friends will come from. And I highly recommend doing both the local route and the groups.
Yeah, I think that that definitely intrigues me to start meeting people online before I go on trips. Not that I'm not a friendly enough person to go meet a stranger, but you know, part of that planning is, okay, who do I know is over here? Who can actually show me around? Who can actually make sure that I don't wander into some dangerous part of the country or something like that? I think that's awesome.
Another thing I should mention, because for many years I was a Big Apple greeter. So if you're not familiar with that, I volunteered and I would take international tourists who came to New York around the city and help them get a non-touristy view of New York. And Big Apple Greeter is a global network. And so when I traveled, I actually went to a couple places, and rather than be the greeter, I got a greeter. So that was another really cool thing. So you might look into whether Big Apple Greeter and their network have these volunteers available to you in the countries you go to, because they can become friends too.
Okay, great, great. You know, you mentioned before at the start that you were an international best-selling author.
Yes.
I'm looking up here. The book is called Voices of the 21st Century.
Yes.
Is that a book about your travel experiences, or is it just a little bit of business coaching or everything?
So it's actually it's a wonderful compilation of 50 stories from 50 women around the world. Mm. My chapter in there is called How Following My Heart Changed My Life. And okay. I shared my story about what led me to quit my corporate career and follow my heart, and what the impact on my life was of doing that. And there are some other amazing stories in there that are just great reads.
So you said 50 different women, 50 stories from 50 different women. Are those women that you interviewed, or is it just a compilation of everyone into the same book?
No, actually. So the book was published by the Women's Speaker Association. So they picked those of us that were going to contribute to the book. So nobody was interviewed. We all wrote our own story.
Oh, interesting. Okay, very cool. Now, do you know some of the people who are also featured in that book? Or
I did not know them before I wrote in that book, but I do now.
Oh, well, there you go. Awesome. Cool. Cool. I like what you said about following your heart and, you know, stop worrying so much. Cause I think a lot of times the challenges, we mentioned this before, the challenges, people think too much.
Yes.
You know, they see that they see the state of the world, or they hear somebody say something about this or that, and they start thinking why I can't do this. And this pertains not just to travel, but just to almost anything that you can pursue in life. And, you know, I'm of the mindset that you should just go after what your heart is telling you to do.
And, I agree. And it is not always easy. And I think our biggest problem is that if you can understand what your heart wants, and, you know, you listen to where it pulls you and the feelings that you're having, the first thing you'll say is, but that's not logical. And expecting the heart to be logical is probably the problem. So if you can let go of that and just understand your heart is your heart, it's not about logic. It's ever since I started listening to my heart and following my heart, it really not only changed my life, but man, I have been guided to be in the right places at the right times. Like, I don't know how to explain following my heart to New Zealand in February of 2020, of all places in the world, and getting locked in to there of all places in the world is pretty amazing. And that's just one thing that happened because I followed my heart.
Right. Well, that would have to be challenging, being stuck somewhere. But, I've seen the pictures of New Zealand, and I was like, I don't know if I would necessarily complain about being there. It was very beautiful.
It's stunningly beautiful. Obviously, when you're in lockdown and you can't go see it, it's a little different. But, you know, one of the gifts as a traveler is that I basically am really good at making friends and getting involved in whatever I have to, you know, feel that I'm part of. Like, I basically created a whole community for myself because I was stuck there. So I think that's an advantage, again, as a traveler and going with the flow. And, you know, you have a choice because plans rarely go as you thought they would. And you can get upset about that and push back and argue, or you can have a meltdown for a moment and then take a breath and then look at, like, what's plan B and go with that.
Right, right. Now, if I were to say, hey, I like to visit 3 countries this next year, do you have any recommendations as to 3 that I have to see? I mean, I've been in 27 different countries. I'm sure you can appreciate every single one of you've seen, but do you have like a top 3 or 4 that people have to go visit?
Yeah, it's such, like, I'm asked this all the time, and thank you for not saying favorite, because I there's no one favorite. Every country is, I mean, just amazing. I'm as someone that, you know, when I went on vacation in corporate, you only have a week, maybe 2, so you don't go very far. So for me right now, my passion, I love Europe, right? I mean, I've lived in France. I could tell you wonderful things about Europe and Portugal and things like that. But I would say my new current obsession is like South America and Africa. Okay. And specifically, I loved Argentina. I loved Peru. I loved South Africa, Namibia, and Botswana as a few countries that I would highly recommend. So I traveled by bus throughout South America, so it can be done. I did it alone. I, you know, made sure that I understood proper protocols with bags and things like that. I didn't. I did a lot of overnight buses, which are really great because that doubles as your rent for the night. For like $10, you've got the transportation and the room all in one. I think what's nice about South America in particular, and even if you can pick Argentina and Peru and other countries, is that it's being on one continent, that's very easy to cross borders. It makes it a really fun place if you have a long period of time to explore, because you can see so much. And Africa's a little bit of a different animal as a solo traveler and also white. I did not feel comfortable traveling alone, so I did safaris.
Okay.
But wonderful, wonderful experience.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, you know, I appreciate that. It's making me want to travel more and more. Like I mentioned before, when I was speaking to Mikkel and to you, it's just like, okay, my plan this year, and I'm sharing this with you because I've told everyone in the audience this a few times. My plan this year is to purchase a new home with my wife.
So, oh, congratulations.
Thank you. I don't think we'll be doing any traveling this year, but definitely next year, as life seems to be getting to be somewhat normal, I think travel is definitely in my radar. And so, where can a person find you to contact you for information, or maybe perhaps get some coaching to plan a lifestyle change?
Sure. The easiest is to just come to my website, which is heatherbegins.com. I chose that because I feel like I began my life when I quit my job and started traveling. So heatherbegins.com, and I've got my all my information there. And if you want to join our Facebook group, and everything's there.
Awesome. Well, I know you've been featured in several podcasts. And once again, I'd like to thank you for coming in this one. Hopefully for those listeners out there who want to find some more resources to go out and live your life, whether you're in your 20s, your 30s, 40s, or older, you know, I think that there's no better chance to begin. I like your Heather Begins, because no better time to begin that new adventure than right now.
Yes, so. Totally agree. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, Heather, and I appreciate it, and I wish you the best of luck, and certainly for anybody else who wants to find you, like she said, you're going to be on heatherbegins.com and on Facebook and other social media.